Watch this.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast, brought to you in partnership with FootJoy. I am Tom Mills, and today I'm joined by Sam Williams. Sam.
And breathe.
And breathe. It's been a hectic few hours. I suppose brought on by our own necessity for golf, stupidity, the complexity of Dublin Airport. We are currently sat in Dublin Airport, opposite the Ryanair customer services. We are flying.
They must be busy.
We are flying with Ryanair. We're just coming back from a four-day trip, which has been a bit good. But let's start at the end. Where else do you start?
Well, yeah, exactly. No doubt, a frequent interruption.
We can go through it. I think check-in anxiety is a real thing.
I think with the closer you get to flying, time starts going in your head at a monumentally fast speed.
Just goes a million miles an hour.
We played Corbelis at about 3:30, whizzed round 12 holes. Come on to that again shortly. And then thought, well, we need to eat, we need to do a podcast, and we've got literally hours. I mean, we left there at about 4:30, 5 o'clock. And
you don't have to wait because it only picks up you. It's all good.
Is that right? It's not going to keep picking up you.
You're all good. Sam's waiting for Ryanair. And if he waits for Ryanair, I think we'll be waiting
for
Ryanair.
But then it's like the rental car. You can't drop it there. You know Ryanair is just going to muck you about. Like we were talking about it just coming down the escalators. Like Ryanair for an airport must be a dream to deal with. Like when you say to them, where do you want your check-in gates, check-in parts to be? Where do you want to put the boarding gates? And they're just like, don't care.
Where do you want your planes to be? Don't care.
Couldn't care less. Stick them literally.
Where are you
going to
put
park?
Your plane cleaners? What plane cleaners? Don't care.
How long do you need to turn around a plane on the tarmac? Well, I mean, we just throw them off the plane. It's crazy, but you know, they seem to have a monopoly on low cost flights, particularly Dublin to Birmingham, which is our little journey now.
And it's interesting because we came here with Aer Lingus. We flew into Belfast. You know, we brought some filming equipment out with us, so I had two bags, each of which were 22 kilos. We have since picked up about a 4-kilo book, and including all this.
I'm taking that as carry-on. If I get challenged, I mean, that book, so it's Gordon Simmons' latest book about the Walker Cup, and if we get challenged about that when we get to check-in, I'm just going to say I'm reading it.
Yeah, like, well, it's just a bit of light reading.
It's just a bit of light reading for a 45-minute flight.
Just a 4-kilo hardback with about 400 pages about the Walker Cup.
100 years of Walker Cup history.
I'll get through it on the I'll get through on the flight.
God, it seems a bit dense, sir. Are you
next
sure?
To me's taking a magazine. What are you talking about? Of course I could take it on the flight.
Excellent time, though.
Rewinding back to Friday morning. We had a bit of work to do at Port Warnock, essentially is why we're out in Dublin right now. But we decided to bite off more than we can chew, as we always do, and we flew into Belfast, which seems to make sense at the time. And stop one on the trip was a course that neither of us have played, and you had found.
Well, usually when we go somewhere, I've found somebody else that has said you should 100% go here, or seen something, or just uncovered something that felt like there was a good reason. But I was really struggling. And we were umming and ahhing, and then I sort of typed in and a few Google searches. It's basically looking for somewhere for €30 or £30 rather to go and play that might be sort of, I mean, I love finding cheap golf courses, and landed on Kyrgyzstan, which is on the Ard Peninsula. If you kind of head east out of Belfast and head down the road about 45 minutes, very idyllic spot, I would say.
A gorgeous drive. Dan, it was absolutely
links,
gorgeous.
I suppose you could probably debate. But linksy, really. Well, saw a few green sites that looked like pretty crazy and thought, hell, let's have a go at this.
Yeah, Kyrgyzstan. I mean, if you look it up on their website, it's got some great videos on there.
Kyrgyz town, Castle Golf Club.
Kyrgyzstan.
Not Castle. Kyrgyzstan, which sounds like it should be somewhere out in sort of Central Asia somewhere.
No, Kyrgyzstan, I think, is how you probably...
Kyrgyzstan Castle.
Would spell it. Everyone seemed to call it Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts off, it's got a fascinating first and 18th, because they basically, they share... It's a bit old coursey. It's not quite as wide as the old course, but you tee off next to the 18th green, you share the same fairway, and you putt out next to the 18th tee box, and it's all kind of one big shared hole. So you've got people kind of everywhere, and it's kind of, when do I hit, what do I do, am I likely to kill someone? I'm kind of working on my swing right now, so things weren't good for me. And
no
before
good.
before we went out, in our infinite wisdom, we said, well, look, we put our money where our mouth is. Let's put a card in. So we...
Hindsight, that was silly.
It was really stupid.
I think hole two, that was very quickly upon me what a bad idea that was.
Kyrgyzstan is definitely a course that you probably want to see at least once before you play it.
The headline summary, I would say, I don't know what your views, Tom. It was very pleasant. It was a really nice place to play. Good draining. Greens rolled nicely. There's probably three or four wacky, like really cool, interesting holes that, yeah, haven't seen much of. And, you know, that was really cool. I suppose downside, it was really busy. Like, I suppose it's a really good thing for the club. But, I mean, it was, there were a few, because a lot of the sort of holes border each other. And there's a lot of stakes out because there's some dropping zones and stuff in play.
Just protection for
it. It felt like you were hitting down the M6 half the time.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy, crazy busy. But I thought it was very enjoyable. I thought, you know, a couple of headlines, 2 and 10, they've got these two greens. There's like a ridge that sort of sits at the sort of probably two-thirds of the way into the course, and then some holes over the other side. And two of the greens, 2 and 10, are sort of perched up on these, like, you know, plinths that, you know, are seriously high above you. I mean, the 10th is about a 470-yard par 5. We played it downwind, and I kind of uncorked one down there. There was a bit of issues looking for my golf ball, but...
Which we won't discuss.
Which we won't find.
But
we found it
purposes.
About 2 minutes
WHS
50,
purposes,
I think I found
we won't
the ball.
Discuss.
So I had about like 150 yards into this par 5 for my second shot. And I thought it was lunacy going for it.
Yeah,
I'm never laid up from 150 yards.
So
the green is tiny.
To try and kind of paint a picture on this, the whole hole is flat until you get... It's pretty much straight. It's slightly doglegs to the left, right at the very end, until you get to the last 20 yards of the hole. And at that point, it kind of goes up. And it must be 20 feet of elevation.
Yeah.
And it just goes up a cliff. And then on the left is gorse. And probably dead. On the right is the mott.
No idea what a mott is.
Which is, if you follow us on Instagram, it said, please do not enter the mott all over it. I don't know what it M-O-T-T-E.
I don't know whether we entered it or not, because I don't know what the hell the mott was. So
we might have gone in the mott.
Kyrgyzstan left to trust.
But
take a word for it, we tried our best.
Yeah, we did. We didn't intentionally break any rules. But if the mott was the hill, on the hill was, again, gorse. So you had about 7-8 yard target from 150 to go to an elevated green that you couldn't miss left, you couldn't miss right. If you were short, you count okay because you just kind of pitch up. I mean, long, in retrospect, long was okay, but you weren't to know that from where we were. So it was just, I put
quite
one
cool
in the
though. If you extrapolate the idea of a hole like Kyrgyzstan, which is very quirky, and probably if you were building a golf course, you wouldn't replicate it. But if you took the principle and the intent behind that golf hole, it's actually really clever. It's really cool.
It was because like you said, you can drive one down there and you've got a proper risk-reward shot, which isn't long, but it's still risk-reward for a par 5. You can easily chip down to the bottom of the hill, chip on to par 5.
Yeah.
I think that's the bit that annoyed you. You hit a good drive, and then you think the whole world should bow down to you and give you like an easy shot into the green.
No, I respected it. I think I gouged something to the front and then took 5 from 30 yards, but... You know, it was quite a fiddly golf course.
Yeah,
all
it was very
told.
You needed to hit the ball in the right place. 2 was a very similar golf hole, except it's a par 4. You kind of drive to the bottom of the hill, and it's got the same kind of elevation up. Yeah. But 2 is quite cool because it's Kyrgyzstan Castle, and it's got the little castle that's sat up. The little sort of, it's only a little, I don't know, little the fortressy thing that sits on top next to the green, which you had to go over.
Yeah,
You nearly clattered into the castle on your approach, but
it's very cool, very good fun,
and some quirky. Of the finest food.
Yeah, some very nice clubhouse food.
With the chairs.
Yeah, I think I went a bit yellow. Like, I think I had soup, sandwich, chips, and onion rings, which I think the January health kick starts in February. If I'm being brutally honest, I'm feeling like the body's not going to hold out touring this year if I don't get my health under control. Like, I've got to. I think with a bit of time now in Feb and no, I mean, like, let's face it, America and Ireland are not the places to calorie count. Like, they like deep fried food. So
and Guinness.
Yeah, and Guinness and all the other enjoyable stuff. So
Kirkeston Castle completed.
I'd go there again. I'd recommend going there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. You know, I'd probably, we could have played at Ardglass, or, I'd really like to have gone and seen the old at Port Stewart. There's, loads of people messaging about places like Malone and Clanderboy, like, would really like to go and play those places in the summer.
Malone has come up a lot on this trip, hasn't it?
Seems to be a hell of a lot.
All roads lead to Malone.
Which is like a Belfast Parkland golf club. I mean, Belfast in and of itself was a really nice city. We went out for
very
dinner
cool.
there.
We went out for evening. Dinner that evening there.
It's a place called the Waterman.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
I mean, I don't know what I was expecting of Belfast. I've never been to Belfast. I've flown in a few times, but then jumped in a car and gone elsewhere. But we actually stayed, had dinner in there, spent some time in Belfast. It was beautiful. Beautiful city. Really nice architecture. Seemed to be thriving. We went into a bar. Some randomer spoke to me. We were with two people from Belfast as well. And
great,
a randomer came and spoke to us, and I turned to Johnny and I was like, do you have any idea what he said? And he's like, I didn't understand the thing, so I don't know how you managed. But it was very cool. Really enjoyed Belfast. Really a lovely meal. And then I suppose the big lucky part of our trip occurred the next day.
Yeah, playing County Down. I mean, look, we've talked about County Down. It's like, spoiler alert, like, it's a world-class place. It's a world-class golf course.
I'd forgotten how good it was.
I think when we went maybe 2 or 3 years ago, this is why going back to places is so cool, is you're left with an impression, but I think recency bias is a thing with golf courses.
Yeah, of course.
So you sort of, you just forget. And then the big thing playing County Down was looking back down that third fairway. And the
I remember
scale of the Moor
time.
Mountains.
I remember standing on the third last time, looking back and thinking, whoa. Because the thing behind the third, you've got that dune that's kind of incorporated into the Annesley course. I think they play, it's the ninth hole, the Annesley round there, which still dying to play.
Looked, that's probably in my top five to play, I would say.
Looked immense. But I just couldn't fit it in. We desperately tried on this trip, but just couldn't really get the time to fit it in. And you got that huge, huge sand hill in front of you that sits behind the back of the third green, and you turn round and you frame basically three holes back to the sort of clubhouse area. You can't quite see the clubhouse, and the Mourn Mountains in the background. The sea's crashing around you, and it's I'd forgotten.
It's breathtakingly good.
Yeah,
yeah, and so many people talk about the front nine at County Down. They go on and on. Like, it's the first. 9 or 10 at County Down, it's the best stretch of golf, and I think that's totally fair and given. Forgot actually how good some of that back nine is as well. Yeah. Like, he really just keep going.
Yeah, some of the finest
giving.
Steps. I think it's the 13th or 14th.
Yeah, no, amazing day. I mean, look, it was quite interesting on this trip, I suppose, because we played a few holes at Portmarnock the following day, and so you put Portmarnock and County Down together as, two of the world's best clubs in GB&I and courses. And then you play two places at the completely other end of the spectrum in Corbelis and Kirkstan. You know what? You kind of enjoy them all, don't you? And they're all completely different.
I mean, it always goes back to that Tom Coyne thing he said to us back in like episode 10. It's all pizza, baby. You can't.
Yeah, you just can't miss, can you?
You can't really go wrong.
Playing again at County Down, that's...
very big tree. And we went out then in the evening, and
what's funny is I've just a sidetrack, because it's amazing they've allowed us through the gates again, actually, if I'm being brutally honest. Because if you go back and watch our film from County Down,
it's a neg fest.
Well, when you look at what Bernard Darwin writes in there,
Sometimes the greens are inclined to be slow.
It's in there. And then I think he goes, people speak of it as a wonderful natural course. It begs the question as to its exact golfing merits. It's so funny.
Just, I'm going to clarify to anyone listening who is affiliated with County Down, not by words.
No. The words Penning of Bernard and Darwin. And Penning.
But it was, I think it was the almighty negging, perhaps they were like, these boys know what they're talking about.
The number of people that have said we should have put that words by Bernard Darwin at the start of the film.
Beginning, yeah.
Otherwise people watch the film and go, are they really gone there and talked about the greens being slow?
Well, a friend of ours been on the podcast before, Sam Clapham, he said he got about halfway through that film and he's like, you've got far more poetic than you usually are.
Yeah.
So they're not my words, that's why. But we went out then into Newcastle that evening. Getting shouted out by Ryanair again. We went out into Newcastle that evening and we parked the car and it was one of these like bars or like hotels that was affiliated to a pub and they were like next door.
Called it a boutique hotel. I felt like that might have been a stretch.
It's
I think the advertising standards agency would probably have something to say about that.
But we got to the bit where the rooms were and it was locked, so we had to then go, we're still in jacket and tie and we need to go into the pub to get the key. So as we parked the car up, I was either faffing or I was on the phone to my wife, one of the two.
Both.
Sam had wandered across to kind of find out where we were going and some dude rocks out of the pub and starts kicking in a like a metal sign, like just kicking it and punching it and all this stuff. And then Sam comes back and says, bit weird. Dude's just done some GBH on a metal sign.
Like 5 yards from me. I was literally terrified. I hate the thought of fighting.
I didn't think anything of it. So I just said, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. We're not going to see him again. So we go in our jacket and tie into the pub to go get the key. And we're carrying the golf bags inside the golf travel bags. So we've got these huge, gigantic, long golf thing in a jacket and tie. And this bloke comes...
clutching onto a pair of Walker Cup books at the same time. I mean, you're just screaming out for a bottle over your head, aren't you, at this point?
Sam, you were so edgy.
You were like, what's so edgy? And you're like... And you say, it's a bit weird. This guy's just shoulder barged me. And I realise why I'm stood in the wrong place. And I'm thinking, nah, it's the same guy. Just kicked the metal sign. I'd really like to get these keys in a minute. I was thinking, another 5 minutes in here and we're going to be Port Marnock with either a cut lip or a black eye, probably both. Just a quick word about Port Marnock, because we had...
Before Port Marnock,
yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. What I would say is we're trying to actively avoid mentioning people just for their own, you know, anonymity and all that stuff. But a huge thank you to the people at County Down that had us over. We had an amazing time. You know, it was such a treat. You pinch yourself, you're so lucky to do these things sometimes. So thank you all for having us. It was very kind of you.
Nice.
Port Marnock. It's quite close to County Down.
Yeah, did it. And we did it about an hour and 40, didn't we?
Hour and 40 on a speed ticket, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just really hope we picked up a speeding ticket in the Republic of Ireland and not Northern Ireland for my license's sake. Across all of this trip, the understanding and appreciation for the amateur game is absolutely insane. Did you not think?
Yeah.
Like, the understanding of who's won the North, South, East, West championships.
Well, even what they are.
Hang on. Scoring.
Value. Even what they are. Because many people won't know. So,
no.
Just
for the provincial championships.
Well, you go ahead. You know, what are the North and South?
You know more about them, well, I think,
really,
than I do.
But they're amateur provincial championships.
You knew who had the scoring record in the North.
Yes, I do. Well, only because I've been given the nod ahead. Yeah. But because Rory McIlroy, I think, shot the course record at
Port Rush.
Shot the course record at Port Rush during a North thing. And when he was like 14 or something. And I was talking to somebody about this and they were like, yeah, but he doesn't hold the low record. It's this person here that holds the low record. I'm sure you can look it up. But we met this person here and I was like, oh my God, he's got the low record of the North. But the North is... they have the North, the South, East, and the West, and they're amateur provincial championships and held at prestigious places around Ireland. But you're like your god status if you win one of them. You know,
it's like winning. It's like winning the college playoffs, isn't it?
But everyone in the US is so into it. They love amateur golf. It's really refreshing, actually, you know, how into amateur golf.
It's sad because you look at St. Crew, who have the North of England each year. You know, I would really like to go to that event. And, you know, people don't follow it, and there's very little interest in it. And I think it does cut to the very core of, you know, Irish sport, is really the amateurism of it and having a real passion for people from their local area that get to that stage of playing in it. You know, you talk to people who say, oh, he's played in the North a few times, or he's played in the South, or, you know, so-and-so's met one guy who's won the South down at Portmarnock.
Yeah.
You know, these are really bloody good players. And there's this real sense of pride to doing it, and it's not just a case of, yeah, the Walker Cup selections, obviously that's the holy grail for an amateur player, or, you know, contending in an amateur championship.
But when we were in the Walker Cup, you know, the amount of Irish spectators, I remember at the time thinking there's so many Irish that come over to St Andrews to watch this Walker Cup. They just love it. And I think it stretches back to, you know, the whole ethos of sports, like you say, because the GAA, or the Gaelic sports, you know, hurling and all the rest of it, they're all amateur. And I think there's a real respect for amateur sport in general in Ireland. I don't know why you started that thing about amateur golf, so I'm going to let you continue.
Why I started about amateur golf?
About Portmarnock.
No, I think it's just a thread that cuts through all the places we've visited in Ireland.
Yeah.
That is, you know, they all have that in common, and I just think that's really cool. The project we were over in Portmarnock for was a really cool thing, and I'm sure, you know, if we say what it is, a lot of people in clubs around Britain will probably think, oh, that is a great idea. The idea within their heritage committee is to gather some of the elder statesmen to talk about the history of the course and film that in
an
interview setting.
And the people.
Yeah, and the club and the characters. Tournaments. I mean, obviously, Portmarnock's held more Irish Opens than, you know, any other course in Ireland. By the way, the Irish Open this year at Raw County Down, like, that needs to go on our schedule. Yeah. There's no way we can miss that. But yeah, I just think that's a great idea, because when, you know, in the fullness of time, when people are no longer here, and when things change, or, you know, you've got these things for posterity, and you were held up in the room at Portmarnock.
I think it was a committee room, or it was certain. No, it used to be the card room once upon a time,
and they
talked about that. It's like how it used to be the card room, and, you know, the advent of, not the advent, but the sort of prevalence of TV. Yeah. People kind of stopped just going to the club to play cards because they could watch TV and go home, whatever. But what was really refreshing about the work that we did at Portmarnock was they've got no immediate ambition to do anything with it. It's not like, oh, we're going to do this because we want it to go out on social media, or we're going to do this because we're going to put it on our website. No, we want to do this because we want to keep it. We want these stories. We want to keep this history for ourselves, and in 10, 15 years we might do something with it, but for now we just would like to bottle it, because, like you say, you know, nobody lives forever. And it was very cool, and we came the day before and managed to witness the captain's driving, which is
again cool. Lots of clubs do it, lots of clubs have a drive-in, but it's the first time I'd been to one, because Blackwell just celebrates nothing. Like, everything's just like 1 foot forward, next day at Blackwell, and there's always some sort of party or whatever going on, but then the next day, just life continues. Although it was quite nice, families were up there, everyone came out, it was so windy. Like, it literally cut you in half, that wind.
We went out about an hour before the drive-in. We're getting papped, so I must be a big fan. We went out maybe like an hour before the drive-in.
You just got papped.
I was there just because of pap. He must be a big Jar fan. And we played the 10th hole and the 9th hole. So just there's kind of, you can just jump one to the other. It wasn't, you know, it's quite close to each other. The 10th was into wind. Friend of the pod, past guest of the pod, Dara Garrahy and yourself, smoke drivers off 10th. Neither of you made the fairway, so which is probably about 170 odd carry or something like that, maybe a bit less.
You couldn't play in that wind.
We then picked up the balls, walked to
115
yards out.
It was absurd.
And we went through pretty much every club in the bag, and in the end, you had to crucify a 3-iron to get pin high. But
yeah, maybe it's spun up, and I'm sure someone will say, well, if you just chip it, whatever. Just
no,
the overriding point was, it was like, that's the strongest wind I've ever felt on a golf course.
And then we just to highlight this as well, I mean, they've got I don't know what the wind meter's called, an anonymity or something like that. Anyway, turn around on the 9th. That's definitely not us. Dara then tees up on 9, hits the green, which is pretty much the exact same length hole, hits the green with his tee shot, which is like 425 yards. So it was like, it was ridiculous. And the captain's driving had the same wind, and it's dead in 2-on-1. And the only objective is to not go in the estuary, the water.
For anyone who's been to Port Marnock, they have a raised tee, it's inclined. So it really promotes putting the ball in the air, and the wind was in and off the left to the tune of 50 miles an hour. Not gusting, it's solid 50 miles an hour.
Very strong. This guy's
captain's just played the best tack tug down the duck first. Hook. Just get it safe, get it on dry land.
I think he nearly hit the
to
the
huge applause and stuff.
The flagpole, and everyone
was good
fun.
The moon. Really good. Great club, great people. Young, like loads of like, just busy. It's proper golfers club, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't think I spoke to anyone who either hadn't played or was a serious good player. Like, it's just a really golfers club. So I asked you last week, what was your thoughts on it?
And well, it was my first time to Port Marnock. You've been before. I was staggered, and Dara has been in the past. You know, kind of like, you know, the king of Clegg. The firmness of Port Marnock, he goes on about it and on about it. But I was staggered how firm it was. Like, staggered. We were playing, the wind died down in the afternoon. We were playing in, I'd say a 3-4 club wind, which, you know, is eminently playable. And you couldn't play to numbers. There's no way you can play. If your flag is 150, you don't play 150. You can't do it because the ball never stop. And it's January. It's January in Dublin.
After a very wet winter.
You kind of have to play a 100-yard shot and just let it release up, and there's nothing you can do about it.
You couldn't understand hitting 8-iron uphill 200. From 203 or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, he was like, both of the boys were saying, Tom, you have to hit an 8-iron. It's 200 yards, just hit it. And I hit my 8-iron, pin eye right, and I just...
It's a very different experience.
It's almost scary.
Yeah.
Because you're just thinking, you're now thinking with a completely new dimension to a golf course. You're thinking, what's in front of the green? What's the topography of the front of the green? How do I get the ball to finish where I want it to finish? Which was...
You don't buy me on this, but it does make the target feel very small. Particularly when you're playing, there's not loads of like cross bunkering and stuff in front of greens, but it really does promote angles. So... You know, if you're on the wrong side of the fairway, where you might have a greenside bunker that obstructs your view of the pin, you're in real trouble. Like, you really have got to seek out the best angles. So it makes those targets off the tee, and when you're playing into the greens, exceptionally small.
I think it promotes thought.
Yeah.
I think you have to think your way around. And experience, if you haven't got the experience, it's nigh on impossible, but you have to think your way around it. If you don't, you're just going to get...
Very grown-up golf course. So, now, a year or two ago...
Hang on, we're not finished yet. A shout-out to the Port Marnock Golf and Links Hotel, where we watched...
Bloody good hotel.
Really good hotel, where I think it was the old Jameson Manor.
It's all part of the Jameson estate.
Jameson Manor or something like that. But it's been done up recently, very plush, you know. It was a lovely little hotel. And we watched, we're huge, Kansas City fans now.
Massive Kansas City Chiefs.
I mean,
fans.
We're obviously huge Taylor Swift fans, and now
with Kelsey.
Kelsey's
what's his name? Travis
man,
Kelsey,
isn't he? Just
they're
Taylor,
all over
Taylor
it.
Kelsey, is that his name?
Travis Kelsey. Travis Taylor Kelsey. Taylor Swift. Yeah.
Travis Kelsey. He's the man. Like, we're huge Chiefs fans now. So we watched the AFC Championship game.
Well, I was telling you about this conspiracy that the color of the logo that scene, the color of the logo, like that's 3 or 4 Super Bowls. I don't really follow American football.
You do now.
But it's released a year in advance, and the two dominant colours in those logos have always been the colours of the finalists, and the colour that's least represented in the logo is the team that goes on to win. So by that would have meant the Baltimore Ravens were going to win the Super Bowl. I think that might have gone out the window.
Yeah, well, they lost to our favourite team. So.
I do find American sports a bit strange. There's no continuity. It's a pretty tough watch, isn't it? Let's not dwell too much on this. I don't think there's any risk of Cookie Jar becoming an NFL podcast.
As big of fans as we were, we got through the first half. And
huge Kelsey
and
fans.
Knocked it on the head. Yeah. But I mean, Kelce did get a touchdown in that first half. So, and Taylor went mental in the box, which is brilliant.
So it's pissing down with rain this afternoon, and I said, we're just going to drive to Corbulis. I think I wanted you to get the drone in the air. It was so bleak.
Yeah, I mean, you're like a dog with a bone with a drone. It's considering you're a man who's like, oh, I just hate aerial shots. So boring. I like arty stuff on the floor.
It's because you pointed at the sun all the time, and I hate the product.
Get your drone up. Go on, get your drone up.
What I really wanted is I wanted to hear some of the poetic words. So before we talk about Corbulis, you just take some of the hyperbole in this and go back and listen to a more well-constructed version of a Course Diaries episode on Corbulis.
With
Darragh Garrahy, which we recorded a while ago. Two L's in Corbulis, Corba, two L's, IS. But I felt like I'd built this up so high. And then we drove there and actually, so I've had a chat. Guys were like, get out and play. You got yourself a cheeky little foot joy top. Foot joy was everywhere this week, by the way.
Yeah.
Foot joy was absolutely everywhere. Everybody we played with wore Premiers.
Yeah,
like to a man. Like it's actually stupid why they're sponsoring us. That they've already got the market sewn up. Like they've got it completely sewn up.
Don't stop that, now, guys. Yeah,
no, we'll just carry on. Take this out the pot.
But
it's actually incredible.
Got
like
a Corbulis top because it was raining, and I was like, we're getting a flight in 6-5 hours. I'm not going out and getting drenched. So I bought a Corbulis waterproof, which will be my pride and joy going forward. But no doubt you'd built this place up to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. And I think the thing that makes it so good, spoiler alert, I agree, it's really good. But the thing that makes this place so good is it's an outstanding topography. It's duneland, it's crazy, it's thought-provoking. But they haven't gone mental. Like if that course, I'm telling you right now, and I'm sure you already know this, but if that course was 7,200 yards and charged 250 euros a pop, you'd never be able to get on it. It would be ram busy, absolutely ram busy. But the fact that it's shorter and cheap, that it blew my socks off. Absolutely blew my socks off. We're okay. We've still got...
I'm going to check.
So we don't take off for another 40 minutes. We're about 3 minutes from the gate and Sam is...
Anxiety is just high.
And what did it say?
Go to gate.
Okay. Well, we're at the gate, so life's all good. He's so stressed right now. But Corbulis, just to give it a very brief overview...
I think it's proof. It's like you nailed it, I think, whole two. If you get good land... You're laughing.
You don't need to do much with
it. All that matters in this business.
The land was so good that...
You could literally send a blind man out there and they would come up with a pretty decent golf course.
I push back a little bit because it was really well rooted. My take on it was more, the land is so good that if I were to guess, I'd say that they definitely don't have more than 3 greenkeepers. But they could still maintain fabulous golf course where the greens were quick.
Got there, kind of shocked. Just said, yeah, greens are unreal. Probably the best greens in Ireland right now. I wasn't kidding. I mean, they were soaking wet.
The greens were great. The fairways were great.
They were unbelievably good putting
services. You can get
away
with it because God made that land for golf.
Mm.
And I think that's what... The problem is we're spending... I mean, these big developments in America now are going out and finding these... this really heavy sand-based soil and trying to get what we've kind of had for ages in Britain and Ireland. And I just thought we played 13 holes. By the time we played the 13th hole, it was pitch black.
Yeah, we couldn't do any more, could we?
And
I remember 14 being really good as well, a little par 4 that runs down the right alongside the coast. Cool golf hole.
I mean, there's some absolute...
There's another one
knockout.
Or two that run back. I think you cross over the road and you go into some slightly different line
knockout
for a couple of
holes.
But it's like we said last time, you go there, like it's actually perfect for what we've just done. I'm flying in a few hours. I haven't got time for a full, like, massive round of golf, but I can whip around there in
15 minutes from Dublin Airport.
It's so good.
15 minutes from the airport. So we finished up. We packed all our bags up in the car park. And I was like, right, okay, let's go car drop off. If we weren't idiots, it would have been a lot quicker. But we ended up going to Five Guys, and then we ended up...
And if you played your golf from the age of 12 at Corbulis... You would be an outrageously good golfer. Like, it just tests all the different areas of the bag. You've got a great short game, really small targets with the greens. You know,
and you can rip driver, you just need to be really straight.
Yeah, you just got to have it on rope.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't have had this trip.
Two holes maybe you could rip driver on in the 13 that we played, but you can. I mean, I'm not brave enough to do it, but I mean, go back and listen to the if you want some hyperbole on Core Bliss, go back here. But I can now add my two penneth and say, yes, I agree, I thought it was brilliant. Ban vibes. So Castle Rock, I've got a little nine-holer called the Ban. Same sort of thing. It's short. It's between big dunes. It's got marum everywhere, and it's just really lovely, lovely.
There just needs to be more courses experience. On less than 100 acres. There just needs to be more of them.
Yeah.
You know, and you know the nuts and bolts of Corbulus probably sell more like 75. It's excellent, and it's just when you've got 75 acres, golf is such a sustainable model. We have zoned out a little bit on golf news, I think, last few days again.
I haven't got a clue what's going on. Something about Anthony Kim.
I mean, if he makes a comeback, you know, we should probably do a bit more on the Anthony Kim thing on a separate podcast. But if he ends up coming back, I feel like that's just a... You know how they sometimes put out those fake press releases just to kind of buy some... column inches. I feel like that someone must have run on that. I can't work.
As someone who came to the game less than 10 years ago, am I putting you on the spot too much here?
I mean, I would need to go and do a lot more research on Anthony Kim to do this.
Should we
justice.
Do an Anthony Kim player profile?
I think so. That would be that good. If we could find a real good, you know, person that sort of really, I think you need a lot more of the context behind it, but. He's just a sort of legendary character, isn't he?
Is he a savant?
Just an unbelievable talent who just was on the scene, was unbelievably good, swung it so well, injured, came off the game. Rumours are that his insurance policy basically dictates he's not allowed to play golf anymore, so once it's paid out on that, it's like, you are done with that sport. If he came back to Liv, does that mean Liv pay off whatever clause is
in there? I don't think they have any issues with money. So
I haven't even read a single article on the topic, but I actually think of all the things that would get Liv... I mean, like hell, if Anthony Kim all of a sudden started playing Liv, I would definitely tune in and watch. So the one person that is clearly going is Hatton. I suspect at the time of recording that's already come out.
Yeah, well, it's the news that's coming around, yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, what a big January.
Huge. And as promised, we're going to put it out on a Tuesday morning. We're recording this in the airport on a Monday evening just to make sure that it gets out 5 a.m. on a Tuesday morning.
You're looking forward to some sleep. You're not a morning man, are you?
You caught me mid-REM cycle this morning, so I wasn't a happy bunny. But
you thought there was a fire?
I was convinced we were having a fire in the hotel. I was very tired. I mean, we've been operating, I think, for the last four or five. We had a decent sleep last night. It's been 1 a.m.
bedtime.
Yeah, 5 hours sleep a night, and running on that for 3 days just grinds you down eventually. Too much Guinness, too much red wine. Great red wine, but
we weren't really overdoing it. But it is just this tour life. There's never more than a minute spare. And then when we had 2 seconds, we go and race off into a shopping centre and get a Five Guys. And then I lose the parking ticket. And it's like, oh, God. And then we can't find the car rental. I mean, is it any wonder, you know, things go wrong?
However, credit where credit's due. Our experience with Ryanair to the point that we're sat in what I think is a Wetherspoons in Dublin Airport waiting to board.
Similar-ish. Other brands exist.
As of right now, our experience has been very good. There's been very few questions asked about overweight luggage. We didn't have to queue. Dublin had those new scanners where you can just lob everything through and it's just super quick when you get through security. So as long as we can wrap this pod up in the next 5 minutes and get on the plane,
I think we're still got another €150 to spend to get the backpacks through. But
well, let's find out. Okay, anyway, until next time.
Adios.
Watch this.